Recording in progress.
It's a Declare Your Independence on September 11th, 2021. This is COVID-9/11, and if you haven't seen the parallels of what's going on, you have not been paying attention. One of the guys that has been paying attention, Kent Heckenlively, you know, he has such an impressive bio. What I'm going to do is I'm just going to read this to you, and then we'll get into the conversation. We've had Kent on before. Kent Heckenlively is the co-author, along with Dr. Judy Mikovits and now Frank Rossetti in their latest book, they're the Plague series. There's three of them. We'll talk about them. And I like having Kent on because it's so I get translated from what the other guys say. I'm like, what the heck are they talking about? So Kent helps a great deal and is a big force behind the understanding, the layman's terms of we get it, you know, in the books. And he has a lot of skills in doing that. But he's also a very, you know, highly educated, motivated individual himself. So let me go and read this bio and you'll understand. Kent Heckenlively is an attorney, a science teacher, and New York Times bestselling author. During college, Heckenlively worked for U.S. Senator Pete Wilson and was the school's Rhodes Scholar candidate. In law school, he was a writer and editor of the school's Law Review and spent his summers working for the U.S. Attorney's Office in San Francisco. Well, hell, we can stop right there, but wait, there's more. In the summer of 2010 and 11, Heckenlively attended the Teacher Research Academy at Lawrence Livermore National Laboratories, spending 8 weeks in a virus lab investigating the expression of microRNAs in a monkey model of Ebola infection. Kent's 2020 book with Dr. Judy Mikovits, Plague of Corruption, was the runaway science bestseller of the year, selling more than 200,000 copies. Since that time, Kent has co-authored three more books, Google Leaks, Behind the Masks of Facebook, and Ending Plague, again working with Dr. Judy Mikovits on Ending Plague, as well as Dr. Frank Rossetti, a 38-year government scientist, was the third author in Ending Plague. In what may be the stupidest move of his career, he has recently decided to take on Harvard Law Professor Alan Dershowitz in a book called The Case Against Vaccine Mandates, coming out in October 26, 2021. Despite his three previous books taking very controversial positions, each has received the endorsement of the very liberal Kirkus Reviews. Of his book on Google, Kirkus wrote, "It was a powerful case against Google that deserves readers' attention." Of his book about Facebook, they wrote, "Hartwig and co-author Heckenlively compellingly provide a mountain of evidence for their argument and provocatively raise questions about the societal impact of a firm that wields such political influence within its reach, which includes a third of the world's population." On his third book in the Plague series with Dr. Mikovits, Kirkus calls it an engrossing expose of scientific practice in America. We look forward to Kent's new book, The Case Against Vaccine Mandates. Hello, here, that's what we'll be talking about. Destroying the arguments of Alan Dershowitz and the increasingly demented Joe Biden. Demented Joe Biden. All right, well, that's kind of making an opinion, but he's definitely something. All right, let's talk to Kent Heckenlively about this. You know, the thing in the news of late, we just put up at the top of Freedom's Phoenix, a letter that went to United Health Group, and we have a listener that works for them at a high-end IT of whatever, and doing his best to keep his head down, just does not want to take the mandatory shot. And this letter came out from the chief officer saying, here it comes, and they did a late Friday news dump on this thing so that it, you know, didn't hit the news wires and kind of old news by Monday. I've seen this is how government does it. You know, they just dump this right after hours, and then, you know, all the employees are left dumbfounded and they got to get shot. So let's talk about that first. Your book coming out now in opposition to Dershowitz and Harvard about mandates. Tell me what you're going to be saying right when they're mandating. So go, Kent. Tell me everything.
Well, it's really kind of interesting because what happened was my publisher approached me about writing this book about vaccine mandates, knowing that I would be against them. And so I agreed to it. And then I said, oh, are you going to publish a counter book, the case for vaccine mandates? And he goes, oh, yeah, you've already got a writer for that. And I said, who's that? And he goes, Alan Dershowitz. And I thought, oh, man, I don't know if I would have agreed to it if I knew he was going to be on the other side. But, you know, I started to do my research on it. And I found that there was a fatal flaw in Dershowitz's argument, because I've heard him speak about vaccine mandates, and he goes immediately to this 1905 case, Jacobson versus Massachusetts. So you'll hear this case talked about again and again, that supposedly this 1905 case set the standard for vaccine mandates. And so I went and I actually read the case, and it didn't say that at all. Here's what was going on. 1905, smallpox epidemic. So how bad is smallpox? Killed 300 million people around the world, okay? You know, the couple hundred years we've known about it, okay? So much more serious than COVID. So the state of Massachusetts put in this law saying that you need to get a smallpox shot, and if you don't, they're going to fine you. How much should they fine this guy? $5, okay? That's the equivalent of $150 today, okay? That was it. They weren't taking his job from him. They weren't letting him, preventing him from going on ocean liners or anything. They were just saying, you have to pay a fine. They didn't force inject him. And so I'm reading this and I'm saying to myself, well, this doesn't give, you know, authority to forcibly mandate somebody at the threat of losing their job or not being able to go to school or anything like that. And I thought, why are they getting this so wrong? I went and found a lot of other commentary saying that this is not, you know, supporting mandatory vaccination. And this is just saying the government has the right to impose a small fine and let you go on with your life. Well, on constitutional grounds, I don't agree with that, but that's kind of a decision that everybody, I think, could live with, okay? You know, just, you know, hey, $150, that's one-third of blowing through a red light in California. I think, you know, we can get along as a society with that. But then I started looking at what came after Jacobson versus Massachusetts. And there was this case called Buck versus Bell. And I'd heard Dershowitz talk about this case before. And so I went and I looked at Buck versus Bell. Well, Buck versus Bell cited one case, and that was the 1905 Jacobson case. And what Buck versus Bell was about was the state saying it had the right to involuntarily sterilize a female psychiatric patient. So this was, you know, the involuntary sterilization that was done to over 60,000 Americans during that time. Well, I dig a little bit deeper into this, and I find out that the majority opinion was written by Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr., and I do some research on him, and I find out he was one of the leading eugenicists of his day. And all of this came out of this eugenics program that was really brought to the United States by his father, Oliver Wendell Holmes Sr., who was the dean of Harvard Medical School, had many high-profile individuals. And I started to find out that the eugenicists were really trying to infiltrate government in order to control the population, okay? And they seized all these powers. Now, I think that anybody today would be horrified at the idea of the state involuntarily sterilizing somebody. And so, and as I did a little bit more research on it, I found out that the Nazis and Hitler got most of their eugenics idea from the American eugenicists. And where were they situated? They were situated at Harvard. They were situated at Stanford. In the scientific community, they were at Cold Springs Harbor. And so, you know, a lot of people talk about the eugenicists. And, you know, I have to say, as I looked at it, I couldn't find much about the American eugenicists after World War II. So they either reconsidered all their ideas or they just went quiet. So
Planned Parenthood, that's what they did.
I'm not saying that Alan Dershowitz is a eugenicist, just that he is working at the academic institution, which was the center of American eugenics before World War II. And these powers were basically seized upon by the eugenicists. So as I looked at the progeny of Jacobson, I said to myself, they are lying their asses off about this entire line of constitutional law, because no person in America today who is of any substance would be saying, oh, the United States government has a right to involuntarily sterilize you, okay? And that's the progeny of Jacobson. But, you know, in defense of Jacobson, I have to say, they never anticipated that there would be a mandatory vaccination, that you would lose your job, that you would not have educational opportunities, that you couldn't participate in society.
The principle is the same, though, Kent. I mean, if they're going to penalize you, they're going to, if you want to see the future of a society or a country, you just look at what's rewarded and what's punished. You know, noncompliance was punished. Compliance was rewarded, you know, even a little bitty baby bit. And if you're not going to do it, they're going to up the punishment and, you know, reduce the or up the benefit you get. You get to fly and do whatever the heck. I mean, you can see the future if you look at what is rewarded and what's punished. And it's obvious that they wanted to reward and punish. You're not complying with the or complying with the government edicts.
Absolutely. And so what I say in it is that there's a principle that we're forgetting, which is that my body is my property. Okay. Anytime the government makes any move to say that your body is not your property, whether that is fining you, whether that is saying you can be owned by somebody else, which was the principle of slavery, you know, in World War II, what was really interesting, what the Nazis did, was the first group they went after in Nazi Germany was not the Jews, it was not homosexuals, it was German children who had a disability. So basically what you would do is you would give your children up to the state, who said they were going to raise them in this institution, and what they would do is they would murder them, okay? So they started that in 1939. They were, quote, so successful in that program, they expanded it to adults who were German citizens, who were adults who were defective in some ways, and they could define that in any way they wanted. You know, you could be an alcoholic, you could be schizophrenic, you could have epilepsy, for example, is one of the things that they would do. Well, what happened was there was such an outcry in Germany that German adult citizens were disappearing that they actually stopped the program. And so in some strange, but by the same token, the program to kill disabled German children continued throughout the war. The program to kill disabled German adults did not. It stopped within 6 months. But I find myself saying we're at that same kind of moment in American history, because I have been fighting for so many years against vaccines for children because I believe it is devastating a generation of children. But now what we're seeing with these, but that harm can be invisible to a lot of people. Because, you know, because children are growing and developing, and, well, if they just fail to thrive, well, they just fail to thrive. You know, who knows what caused that. But what we're having now is we are having so many adults who are in absolutely perfect health who are taking these shots, and then they're having heart attacks. Then suddenly cancer explodes in them. So,
okay, in your arguments, when you make these arguments about, you know, for, against, and so on, how much weight do you give statistics? For me, I don't care. You know, if I want to snort Clorox, you know, it's my body. What do you care? You know, and you know, well, it affects society in some way. Well, you know, then don't, you know, give me health care. I mean, I don't want you to be giving me anything anyway. But don't prevent me from paying for it myself, or prevent me from going to Doogie Howser and have him do brain surgery on me for chickens. Freedom's the answer. What's the question? And I'm seeing that it's all about control. It's about regulation. It's about monopoly. It's about who gets to do it and who doesn't. It's about how many doctors you can even have. And, you know, there's something wrong. And to freedom-oriented people, libertarian, voluntarist, anarchist, leave me aloneist, whatever, you know, this has been obvious for a long time. And what exactly we have been warning about what would happen. Well, it's happening right now. To the benefit of what? Now, you know, we talked about eugenics. You know, I see a lot of that popping up. You know, the same people for same reasons, because they want to rule everybody and they want you to be the way they want you to be, and because they can, you know, whatever. But I want an argument of they can't. I mean, that was the whole point of the founding of the Dream of America, the Declaration of Independence. The only reason you have a government is the defense of individual rights. When they don't do that, it's time to alter, abolish, it's your right, your duty. Well, guess what? They're not doing it anymore. Who are they serving? These elected officials, these bureaucrats, this infiltration into all levels and institutions of everything are doing this for something. And we should have taken Kamala Harris very seriously. We said, we're going to track your ass down. We know who you are. We're going to get some, you know, and this is what's going on now. And, you know, you don't have somebody, Vice President of the United States of America, get up and sit there and tell you they're going to do it, you know, unless they at least think they're going to do it, or at least try. We'll get into how successful they may be. But what is it they're really trying to do? This is not about, I guarantee it's not because they give a crap about me. It's like when I first started getting involved in activism in the late 80s, early 90s, the big thing was fluoride. You know, abortion and fluoride, yeah. Man, you had to have an opinion on that. And a libertarian came to me and he goes, why do you think the government gives a crap about your teeth? You know, when do you have forced medication from the government? When does that ever turn out to be a good thing or for your best interest? And when you look at it from that perspective, you're going, damn, you know, I thought Uncle Sam just really, 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 really liked to have good smiles on America. I mean, you know, I'm that concept, that idea of forced, compelled, selected medical intervention by a crown, by a monarch, by a dictator, by a government, never, ever turns out well. What is their real agenda?
It's a great question. And you know, what was really fun in writing Ending Plague was to get the perspective of both Judy and Frank Rossetti. Now, Frank Rossetti's opinion is these people are stupid and they don't know what they're doing. Judy's view is they're evil and they do know what they're doing. And so that's why I think it's important to have both perspectives in the book. But at the end of the day, I look at it like this. Let's say you have some serious medical problem and your medical system comes to you and says, you have a choice of two doctors. One is really stupid and the other is maniacal. Which one do you want? I don't want either of them.
No, man. Death and taxes.
I cannot sit here and tell you that they are stupid or they are evil. I can tell you it's one of the two. Both of those are absolutely terrible, and I should never be forced to make that choice.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter, you know.
Because I'm just as dead both ways.
Is it? Well, let's talk about that a little bit. How dangerous do you think? Dr. Judy and I, you know, speak quite a bit, do shows, and we talk there's news every week. And I'm relatively concerned. This is really going to, and I just fine. I just not going to take it. And then they're going to try and make me take it. I go, that's one of the signs. We make a lot of signs. It's one of the signs that we're doing this week in a big Prescott sign, you know, thing that we're doing, activism. Make them make you. I just want to make them make me. You know, let's see how that works out.
Yeah. So it's a wonderful point of view. And so what I try to do in the case against vaccine mandates is I make that argument that you say, which is, it's my body, it's my property, I get to do whatever the hell I want with it. You know, it makes me angry when I hear doctors won't treat the unvaccinated. Well, are they going to say, oh, I'm not going to treat the fat, I'm not going to treat people who drink too much, I'm not going to treat old people? You know, this is absolutely insane, okay? And so I find myself saying that I want to make the government power argument. I also want to make the people argument. And what's really interesting is over the years, the government has attacked vaccine hesitant people through a number of ways which are completely inconsistent. Like if you go back a couple years ago, what you'll find is the story is that the vaccine skeptics are white, well-educated Whole Foods moms. It's like, okay, well, you know, actually there's a good amount of proof for that. But it's also blacks and Hispanics, highly educated people, blue collar. There's actually kind of an interesting U-shaped correlation that they found recently, which is 24% of PhDs don't want to take the shot. 22% of like blue collar people don't want to take the shot. But if you only have a master's degree, it drops like 8%. So I kind of say, you know, when you're on the bottom of the pile, you know that things suck. Okay.
You're not trusting them anyway.
Yeah. As you climb the ladder, you're kind of thinking to yourself, okay, I'm doing all this hard work. I'm going to get to that point where there are really smart people. And then you get to your PhD and you go, shit, it's just as bad as, you know, I thought it was when I was in high school. Okay. So I'm really happy that, you know, as they're going to start to ban people from public spaces, you know, the biggest group they're going to have to ban are black people, you know, Hispanics. How's that going to look for them? You know,
why do you say that? Why is it that they're,
well, because the greatest vaccine hesitancy is among the black community.
Yeah.
So as they're firing all these people, like all these healthcare workers, well, the majority of them are likely to be black and Hispanic, and then people like me who've got a lot of education. So it's a weird sort of alliance of, you know, white, well-educated people, blacks, Hispanics, and blue collars who are all skeptical about what the government tells them. And so I think it's a really interesting, you know, group that is forming an opposition. People who would not normally find a common cause are going to find common cause against the government in this instance.
Do you think there's going to be an overlap as a common cause between the anti-vaxxers? I want you to answer that question. I'll give you my opinion, but is there a crossover between socioeconomic, race, political ideology on this vaccine thing? Is there?
Absolutely.
You think? Give me some examples. Why do you say that?
Well, the vaccine hesitancy among the black community is sky high. Okay? And vaccine hesitancy among PhDs is sky high. You know, vaccine hesitancy among, you know, cops and firefighters is sky high. You know, nurses are really driving a lot of this because they deal with the patients. They see these things. You know, my wife is in healthcare, and you know, she's scheduled to be terminated on September 30th because she won't take the shot. So
do you think that's going to go through? they're going to do that?
I think that in approximately 19 days, my wife will be terminated from her job. Now, a month from now, when the system has crashed, do I think she might get called back? Yeah, I think she might. But they are definitely going to try it.
Well, they did it with Australia, and they do with the truckers go, you know, we're not doing it. Now we just park, yeah. And we're done. Oh, dip, dip, dip. Ever so sorry for having brought it up. You have an exemption, Mr. Trucker Man. I mean, you know, so it's who is, you know, more essential than a trucker? We're finding out, I can tell you that. And there was a trucker thing I saw that was supposed to be August 31st, and it kind of came and went, and I never even really saw anything. You know, some people wanted to, you know, do some support efforts, and I never really saw anything that was taking root. And because they haven't really got targeted yet. But now that they have this, any company that has over 100 employees, and a friend of mine at work, you know, they have, you know, conversations, and he goes, I'm going to be the 99th welder. And you're like, what? And he goes, yeah, you know, at the plant that he works at, I'm looking for somebody that has under 100 employees, and I'll be welder number 99 or something.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing whenever you have these kinds of mandates, that's exactly what always happens. There's always a restructuring, or you create a subsidiary, or instead of one big company, you got 14 companies of 99 employees. Although, I mean, it always happens. And I know that they have to anticipate this. And Joe Biden coming out and trying to be, just get vaccinated. I'm, you know, for, ooh, our patience is wearing thin. You're not doing it right. We're going to make you this time. That's why I'm going, you know, I'm just make them make you. Make me. Make me. You know, I don't know what's going to happen, but you got to make me. And what they want is throughout history, they always want violence. They want you to react violently. You know, the idea of just ignoring them and starting a parallel society and using, you know, cash, precious metals, crypto, barter, farmer market, little intentional communities that have, you know, the school marm and give her a place to live and a little red brick schoolhouse, and they hire a doctor and a sheriff and they're done. You know, the only government there was is whoever paid, you know, for the teacher, the doctor, and the sheriff, and then you're done, and you should stop there if you even get that far. This is what they're forcing, and it's because of stuff like this. So should we be afraid of it? Should we just make sure we got enough food and prepare to last through it? Should we be intent on non-compliance, or are we going to try and take over the marble capital and be in charge again or something? We're going to vote ourselves free. I mean, what do you think the solution is?
I predict the golden age of Ernie Hancock is just around the corner. Yeah. And I predict it for this reason. When the government does things that are obviously stupid, they lose the respect of the government. So you point to the Australia example, and I just have to point out, remember, Australia banned me from 2017 to 2020.
Yeah,
so I was an early indicator of the true nature of the Australian Republic, or former Republic. I think that there is going to be massive, nonviolent, non-compliance. I think the worst thing in the world would be for there to be violence. You know, look at January 6th and how, I mean, I'm still convinced that was, you know, mainly, if not all, a provocateur action on the intelligence agencies.
But America's naughty words. That was bullshit.
Yeah. Well, you know, what was really interesting was in my Google Leaks book, my co-author tells a story of marching with Occupy Wall Street in Berkeley, California. And as he explains it, up to that time, Occupy Wall Street was definitely loud, but they were not violent. And so here he is at an Occupy Wall Street rally, and suddenly on a signal, 20 people drop, take their clothes off, put on black clothes, put on masks, take their flagpoles, and start trying to break the window of the Whole Foods market there. And, you know, for him, it was lucky because he had a motorcycle helmet and he had his motorcycle jacket on. And so he basically waded into this group of Antifa in order to stop them from breaking the window. And the other thing that was, the thing that was so interesting was that there was one guy who was not dressed in Antifa black, but he was seemed to be like the spotter for the other guys. And he started using all this language about like, hey, these guys are really going to come after you. I'd get out of here. You know, hey, I'm just worried about you getting hurt here. You should get out of here. And he wouldn't take it. And then the crowd came and got the Antifa people out. But it was so funny because in the accounts of January 6th Capitol situation, I found there were a bunch of guys saying that same kind of crap. You know, oh, you police, you should get out of here. These people look crazy. And I was thinking, oh, man.
Yeah,
it sounds like agent provocateur crap.
So many of us stayed away from that. We had a couple of guys that were friends, that local Ron Paul activists that went.
Yeah.
They wanted to go be part of and see and report. And they reported from their hotel room. They lost their car. They couldn't find where they parked it on the whatever. And they said, screw it. And they just went to the hotel room where they had a view of the crowd and they could see, you know, a lot of the goings on. So they were live on our show. Well, they didn't go into the Capitol. They didn't do anything. But the FBI visited them and subpoenaed, had a warrant for their phones. And I'm like, wow. Okay, why? You know, and what do they do with the phones? And you had, you know, by order of, you got to give us your password. And I'm like, really? Well, they're putting people in jail. They're putting them in solitary. You're not hearing anything about it. This is gulag stuff. This is, you know, dare you say, Nazi Germany, Stalin Russia, Mao Zedong, you know, Cultural Revolution China. I mean, you know, this is hell, China now. This is not some far off, long ago land. This isn't in a galaxy far, far away, long ago. This is now in America.
Yeah.
And I remember Naomi Wolf said one time, we had a rally in Washington. It was Revolution March in July of 08. And I was the MC, or one of the MCs, and I was introducing her. And we had had her on the radio before when I was producing for Charles Goyette. And she just happened to say, as she was going up, she goes, "You libertarians are right." And this is when she had wrote her, I think it was 10 Steps to Fascism or something.
Yeah.
Well, this vaccine passport thing, this is it. And I'm going, is it a vaccine passport? I mean, is that what they're just calling it? What is it really?
You know, I think it's, you're not going to earn a living unless you do what they want to. You're not going to participate in society. You'll be socially shamed. I mean, it's quite terrifying. And the quote
is going to be limited to just vaccines. Is that it?
Oh no, but I think that vaccines have the potential to harm so many people. When you have an injured society, you destroy the ability to fight back against tyranny. I think it's interesting how they're going after the police, how they are, you know, what they're doing to the military. You know, they are emasculating these traditional sources of good government to protect individual rights. And so, you know,
how's that been?
What I say is, we cannot look away from what is going on and not see the really dark future that awaits us if we don't do anything. So, you know, I'm really clear in my books. What it has been really very satisfying to me about the Kirkus Reviews is is very liberal. They're out of New York. But what I do with my books is I make sure that I cite all my sources. You can follow my logic. You know, oftentimes they'll say we may not agree with the conclusions that he draws, but he has provided a mountain of evidence, and this is a debate that needs to happen.
Yeah, no, and so, do you really believe that they care? You know, I mean, so many of you know, to have a lot of these journalists, I don't know what the hell to call them. You know, they're not journalists. They're not looking for the truth. They're supporting an agenda.
Well, one of the things I did an interview with Dave Rubin recently, and he raises a lot of interesting points, because I'm interested in those people who were on the left side of the political spectrum who have moved. You know, what caused that change? And I like to use the language that Dave Rubin uses, which is liberals and leftists. And he makes a distinction. I think that's important. I think it's important we start to break apart the left side of the aisle, because, you know, 70s and 80s, kind of when I was growing up, you know, the idea was that if you were liberal, you were for free speech, you didn't like the war economy, you were suspicious of big corporations as well, and you didn't really have a great view of the FBI and what they did. And so it's strange to me how that's shifted. And so Dave Rubin's point is that there are liberals who are drifting into leftism, which is this completely authoritarian communist ideal. But there are still a lot of people who may not quite realize they've drifted that far. And you need to make that vivid to them. And so that's why I think the books that I write, I consider myself the Thomas Paine of this revolution, because I'm writing so goddamn many books. You know, I'm really being an overachiever. Okay. I got 4 books in 3 months coming out. So I'm putting my wheel.
Hi, Thomas Paine.
I'm putting my, yeah. So let's see, I'm going after Big Pharma. I'm going after Google. I'm going after Facebook. And now I'm going after Alan Dershowitz. Okay. You know, if I'm not on the front lines, I don't know who is. So I really want people to, you know, get these books, learn about what's going on.
I want to talk about your experience a couple of years ago with Australia.
Sure.
You were looking to go to Australia and like, let's you know, I'll come to Australia. Let's do it up. And then all of a sudden, you're like uninvited. How'd that work?
Yeah. Well, it was great because there was a movie several years back called Vaxxed, which was about how the MMR vaccine was harming large Americans, large numbers of African Americans specifically, but also large numbers of other Americans. And so they did a tour of Australia, and they got hassled by the government, and they got hassled by the media. And so when the producer, Polly Tommy, was getting ready to leave Australia, they detained her at the airport for 45 minutes. They went through all of her materials. They photographed all of her documents. And the agent said, if we'd known what you were coming to Australia to talk about, we never would have let you in. And I did an interview with her right after that. And so then that gave me an idea. And I thought, oh, well, I just need to let Australia know what I'm coming to talk about. So I published a very public letter addressed to the Prime Minister of Australia. And I declared my intent. I called it the Dangerous Science Tour. And I said, I'm coming to Australia to talk about how bad vaccines are. And given my position as a figure of world importance, I would love it if you met me at the airport. And if you don't have time to meet me at the airport, I'm happy to take an Uber to your personal residence for our private discussions. And please don't make a fuss over me. But if you would like to give me an award, I would like to be given Commander of the Empire, Order of Australia, because it sounds like something Winston Churchill would receive. And so, you know, I didn't think it would attract much attention, but suddenly I'm on the front page of the Sydney Morning Herald. I'm in BuzzFeed. I'm in BBC. In Australia, they denounced me in the Australian Parliament, and they said, we will not allow this dangerous American to come here. And, you know, so I was grouped with Chelsea Manning, you know, Gavin McGinnis, and, you know, Chris Brown, because he beat up Rihanna. You know, it's people that, you know, Australia wouldn't let in. And so, you know, I had a laugh about it because, you know, I spent $30 to, you know, apply, and suddenly I got world attention. And I think they realized that, you know, I'm like Teflon. It won't make me feel bad.
Yeah, no. You were egging it, you know.
I love it. And yeah, so so it's and you know what? I take that view very strongly, which is we need to be like an 80s action hero, you know, where everything is going bad, but he's making quips all around, you know. We just can't be scared of these people, okay? We should laugh at them. And so I will provoke these people. I will poke the bear and, you know.
Yeah, I see that you're going up against, and they're bringing out and dusting off the old record of Alan Dershowitz. Who gives a crap what Alan Dershowitz says? Since when? It's like, you know, it's not like he's elevating you. You're elevating him. I mean, who cares what he says? His pot is so tarnished now, I don't give a crap what he says.
Well, that's what I try to convince my wife of. I try to convince my wife that, you know, I'm not worried about Alan Dershowitz. He should be worried about me. Unfortunately, I haven't been able to convince my wife of that.
Why? What does he have that you're should be worried about? He's just, he's so wrong and so ew and so just, he's CNN. And you just pull him off of the shelf and, you know, here, there's like a puppet, you know, do this. Blah, 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 you know? I don't care what he says.
Okay, so let me tell you a funny story. So my publisher is publishing both the case against vaccine mandates and the case for vaccine mandates, scheduled to come out on the same day, right?
Separate books or in one book?
Two books. Okay. I had suggested there should be one. And, you know, you flip it over, like, you know, the joke right. books, Polish, Italian, but right. they didn't go for that. So I turn my book in, you know, I think I've got a lot of great information. And I get this email from my publisher going, hey, Kent, great. We really love the book and everything. But by the way, Alan Dershowitz was hoping that he could read the first couple chapters just to kind of, you know, see where you're going with this. And, you know, at first I'm thinking, Alan Dershowitz wants to read my stuff? I'm so honored by that. And I thought, screw him.
Screw him.
No, I'm not doing his homework. He's Alan Dershowitz. He should do his own goddamn homework. What am I, like the smart kid and he's the bully who, you know, cribs from me? No way. Alan, you got to do your own goddamn work.
I am so, so, so in agreement. I'm glad you're getting this kind of attention and they'll have you go up again. But I don't see it as like an honor. I mean, I don't see that it's sure as hell ain't a challenge, you know? And I'm glad you're doing it. I'm glad you're doing it. You know, that's going to be good. But the, the Blue Muffy, he never was that great in my mind, did he? You know, I'm like, okay, here's a legal mind. He's just pissed me off so many times. He's never been on the right side of anything. It's always for the state. It's always for collectivism. It's always for control. It's always for they, them, those who won't leave us alone. It's always justifying some freedom ripping, you know, pulling, getting more, you know, permits or whatever. So I'm just like, who cares what he says? And Alan Dershowitz is going to be on tonight. Who gives a crap?
Here's what I hope happens. This time it'll be, who's that guy facing off against Alan Dershowitz? But the next time it'll be, who's that guy facing off against Ken Heckenlively?
I'm glad that you're feeling very good about yourself, because you should, and you've been doing a lot of work. And we talk a lot of the audience, because you're so limited on your time when we can do it. That's why we're doing it on a Saturday. We do spend a lot of time with Dr. Judy Mikovits. She's been very generous with us over the years, and we've been talking to her for like 6 years. And the first vaccine education summit that we did, both you and Dr. Judy spoke. It was awesome. And did you come to our second summit also?
I did not.
So of course, it's always invite Kent, because he gives good information. But I'm just, do you really feel challenged by the other side at all? I mean, do you feel like they got a zinger on me or something?
It's a great question, because as I started the book, I was very nervous. And as I really started to investigate it, I thought, they don't have anything here. This is so antithetical to the American way of life that, I just feel like somebody handed me a gift.
Yeah, it's not even fair.
Exactly. This is not even fair.
What gives them the power that they have? Is it they own the media? They control everything? What is it? Why are they so influential? It's just because the TV says they are. I mean, anybody that has any kind of motivation to learn anything. And remember, when we did our first vaccine education summit, that was in the fall of 16. Within 10 days after I first talked to Dr. Judy, I'm going, oh, this is what I've been waiting
for. I remember that.
Here, I want to show you something. This is 2009, this is when H1N1 started, and we started doing our sign campaigns. We still have this logo. We're doing a bunch of these now for the hospitals and police and fire, and that was where the support came from. This is us doing anti-forced vaccination shots. Back in 2009, they tried to do this. So we knew that this was going to be the mechanism they were going to do it. And we have, of all of these, I'll show you the category. We have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these, articles that go page after page after page in the category of vaccines and vaccinations. And then we do, more sign campaigns and so on. We got a lot more slogans and such. But the thing is that it's been, what I'm so worried about is that we don't learn from history. We don't see that they've done this before. So this is one thing that we do on Freedom's Phoenix. When we send out our email dispatch, we have probably 50, 70 new articles a day. And what we started doing in the last month or two is this. We saw it coming, and we go 1 year ago, we send out links to the email dispatch that we sent 10 years ago of the articles that we had. So we go in there, we have one or two of them a day. Now, of course, it's 9/11, 10 years ago. So what's it going to be about? 9/11 this, vaccine stuff, different tech, it goes on and on and on, cryptocurrency, different technology. I mean, it goes on and on and on and on and on. It's the same stuff. And it's the same people doing the same thing for the same reasons. And that's the point that we're trying to make. Look, we saw it coming. How did you not see it coming? How did you know, Ernie? How did you not know? What were you paying attention to? This has been a effort for they, them, those, won't leave us alone, for so long to what, Kent? What? This is building up to what?
Here's a partial answer to your question. So half of my book, The Case Against Vaccine Mandates, is going up against Alan Dershowitz and the legal arguments he's put forward. The other half is this opportunity to educate the public about how screwed up the vaccination program is by revisiting the controversies and the whistleblowers that most Americans don't know about. So that's really good. And I want to, if you can get it up on your screen, something to make you happy that I've been looking at every morning. Makes me happy. So go on to Amazon, I'm sorry, and type in ending plague. So go on to Amazon, type in ending plague.
That'll figure it out. Yeah.
Okay, so click on ending plague. Scroll down a little bit. Go to how well it's selling. Go down a little bit.
Mike Adams, Dennis Prager, Dr. McCullough, Mickey Willis, yeah. Max Swofford, about the author, blah, 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 product details.
Go down. Go down. Okay, stop. Okay, go back up. Where it showed the categories it was in.
Okay, where's it showing?
Go up a little bit. Oh, sorry, right there. Okay, so click on virology. So let's look at what's selling. The best sellers in virology: Mickey Willis, Kennedy going after Fauci, ending plague, Mickey Willis again. The top 10 are, you know, I think 9 of the top 10 are people who are putting out a different name. Oh, I'm sorry. All 10 of the top 10 are basically my buddies and people who have been moved by Judy's story. So it was really the success that we had that, you know, encouraged Robert Kennedy to go directly after Fauci because of what Judy told him. And here we got Mickey Willis at number 1 for his Plandemic book. And, you know, it's wonderful because, you know, Mickey is a perfect example of how people on the left can change. He was the videographer for Bernie Sanders' 2016 presidential run, okay? And the thing that got him was that as a documentary filmmaker, he, you know, always asks questions. And so he kept asking the question, what is democratic socialism? Nobody would give him an answer. And he said, I couldn't get past the fact that every one of Bernie Sanders, you know, top, you know, volunteers, workers, whatever, staff, they were kids going to Ivy League schools, you know, driving $80,000 cars, and they all had some tale about how they'd been discriminated against. And so, you know, I'm sorry, when you're driving an $80,000 car and you're going to an Ivy League university, please stop the sob story. No, nobody else wants to hear it.
I'm looking at, yeah, I apologize. We had somebody, our next guest is trying to get in. They got their time zone wrong, so they're an hour from now, so I'm letting them know.
Okay.
The Plandemic, you know, what was interesting about that was it kept getting whack-a-mold, you know, when Dr. Judy came out and they were doing it, and we took and put it up on Interplanetary File System to where it can't be deleted, and they freaked. And because they had the file, a seed file that they could start putting out everywhere, it got downloaded a billion times. I'm going,
I know.
You know, aha, 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 aha. So now they're coming after that technology, and we anticipated that they would, so we are doing it a different way, that with an app that they can't do the DNS, IPFS.io. Because if they can censor, if they can stop the communication, if they can, they are, because they can. You know, this is, a lot of people, they go, they wouldn't do that. That would be wrong, you know. And I'm going, yeah. Wow, you have no idea how bad these guys are. I want to ask you, in your experiences dealing with, you know, over the years being censored and curtailed and, you know, defamed and the everything, the platform, demonetized, getting dissed, what will they not do? How far will they go?
You know, I can't tell you, but I am a person of faith, so I fear If they whack me, well, that's God's will. Or if I succeed, that's God's will too. I want you to click on the Plandemic book because this also makes me very happy. So when you will see how great the hunger is for truth. So keep going up.
Let me get to that.
Go up. Let's see how well it's doing right now. Okay, stop. It is number 26 of all books on Amazon. Okay? So they don't have, you know, a budget. They don't have the mainstream media, you know, pushing the thing. This is just activism. This is the number one book in virology in the middle of a, quote, pandemic. You know, and this is counter-narrative stuff. So the answer is they are losing big time because if we weren't having an effect, the top 10 in virology on Amazon would not be all be my goddamn books and the other people who are part of my posse.
This is we knew it's all a timing thing. And when we were doing this, you know, my wife and I, family, friends, activists, fellow activists, we understood the importance of this issue, but we were way ahead of the time. And in 2009, this was not on people's radar, but we could understand what the mechanism by which they were going to control, rule, kill, require, whatever, was going to be some kind of virus or pathogen or whatever. And the reason is because as we would look at the mandating, when they were starting to go to a you have to, and I'm like, whoa, I got, you know, the crown coming chasing me down with a needle. That definitely ain't going to turn out well. And we started doing freedom of information requests. And finally, I got a call at 7 o'clock at night from the assistant director for Arizona Department of Health. And what they had done is they go, okay, here's the document that you wanted. Because it was, we knew it was available, and they knew we knew, you know, and they just, you know, kind of break that link. You can't get to it, you know, on the website kind of thing. And what it was a pandemic plan that the governors in the U.S., part of their Homeland Security thing or whatever the heck it was, they have a plan, you know, for this. And we were wanting to see the plan and how they're justifying it. Well, when they gave us the link and we published it on the page and so on, it didn't even have the governor of Arizona's signature. It was Chris Christie's cover letter for New Jersey. And I'm like, the hell is that about? So yeah. What it was is they just threw one up there because he didn't have one. And what they were doing is when they do sobriety checkpoints, if you have an extreme DUI, if you are over a certain amount, then I guess they're justified in strapping you down and taking blood and force you into medical treatment or something, you know. And that was the mechanism that they were going to use for forced vaccination. If they could take your blood, then they could, you know, make you take a vaccine or something. So They were using this infrastructure they had for hospitalization or trapping you to a gurney or putting you on the bus or whatever as the mechanism for being able to do forced vaccines. Then they made the decision that, well, you could do conscientious objection and you're not going to do it, fine. But you're getting on the bus and you're going into quarantine. You're getting your FEMA camp thing. Well, then in Australia and Canada, and I'm sure they're doing, you know, stuff here in America also, that you got a camp to go to. They're doing it. They're doing it. So now what do we do?
Yeah, so... you know, I'm a big fan of nonviolent resistance, and when I look at figures throughout history, through Martin Luther King, Gandhi, Nelson Mandela, although he was violent, but you know, you have to say, "I'm going to stand up." And
you
so,
know, what do you think of that?
Am I okay with the possibility that I may be jailed or put into a camp? Yes, I am. I am willing to do that. I will do it my way, which is I will be the nicest prisoner to my damn guards, and everybody's going to go, wait a minute, I thought we were putting an animal in jail. We are putting a civilized man, a civilized cultured man in jail.
They don't care.
And,
you know,
I think principled nonviolent resistance will break down the system. Because let me tell you kind of what I'm seeing with this, with what's going on with my wife, you know, in her hospital. Mm-hmm. The fact that my wife has been a speech therapist for 33 years and these people love each other who work together, and now two people in the department are facing termination, not for anything that they've done. They're excellent therapists. It is wrecking the human beings who make up the system.
Yeah, no.
Not the people at the top, but I'm saying,
yeah,
like,
no,
the
I'm
managers
saying.
Who, and so I'm saying, you know, I am looking at the very real possibility that as a public school teacher in California, I'm expecting that I will be terminated by the end of this year. And here's what I'm going to do if I am terminated. I will be terminated, and the day after my termination, I will walk into my classroom, and in full view of my entire class, I will slowly start dismantling my room. And they will see their teacher that they love being kicked out. I will heighten the drama to where the system breaks. That's what all of us need to do.
I am of the opinion that the people that will incarcerate won't care. The jailers won't care. They're selected to not care. I mean, you know, Epstein that didn't hang himself has jailers didn't care. Hell, they didn't even look. I mean, you know, or they were paid to not care. Or they do, you know, this is, I don't see, if there is going to be a Red Dawn and it's a rush on the concentration camps, you know, and you're free, would you leave? Or you say, no, not until they let me go. I'm going to sit right here, you know. At some point, there's...
Hey, Ernie, if I'm in the concentration camp and you stage a rescue of me, I will leave.
Okay, I just need to know. You know, I don't want to waste my time here. Oh, go without me, you know. This is what we... You know, I got to show this. The first magazine that we did for our... Freedom's Phoenix magazine was this. You go to online magazine, and the cover was to portray this very eventuality, you know, and it was, go to the our first one, first. And it was, you know, the idea of us, you know, being freed, you know, from, let's see, first page one, all right. Should be, yeah, this one. It was with this idea in mind, you know, is she breaking out or breaking them out?
Yeah.
You know, I never really made a decision in my mind, you know, which it was. And she's cutting the barbed wire, you know, let the people incarcerated out, whether she was in or out or whatever. Freedom's Phoenix. I definitely go for this photo op, you know, while you're incarcerated at the drive-in theater. You know what I mean? You know, we'll do it at sunset.
One of my big heroes, Ernie, is Vaclav Havel, who went from the jail to the presidency. So if they throw it, look, when they banned me from Australia, they made me bigger than I ever was before. So if they put me in jail, they're going to make me bigger than ever before, and I'm going to end up governor or president.
Yeah, I'm glad you're feeling very good about your prospects here. But, you know, it's, do you think that it's the, what we deal with is general public opinion. I'm just like, you know, it's just all about, that's what it's always about. And general public opinion doesn't watch football or basketball or baseball anymore. General public opinion doesn't give a crap about the Olympics. General public opinion doesn't, you know, participate in a lot of their online crap, or they're starting to diminish participation in certain social medias. And, you know, it's getting to where general public opinion is, we need to be growing more food. And general public opinion is, you know, I don't give a crap what 4 out of 5 doctors say, because they're all corrupt. So, you know, it's all about general public opinion. And that's where you come in and you play a big role in this with your research and your opinion. What do you think general public opinion should be, and what do you think it is?
I think that the public is really struggling with this vaccine mandate issue, because I don't think they understand how bad the vaccine program is, how corrupt it is, how it's not like any other consumer product. But as they're attacking people's jobs, you know, lots of people, there's so many vaccine injured kids out there. Everybody knows a family who's got a kid with a problem. I think there's hardly a family in America that, you know, beyond a sibling or two, doesn't have a kid with some, you know, immune system problem. I think that they have attacked it the wrong way. They wanted too much. When you see how empires fail in history, they try to do too much. I think that this is a great overreach. I think it's going to collapse. I want them to make me the face of the enemy, because then that means I have a public profile. What they have done for the past 20 years.
You want to be face of the enemy? You want to be the face? You want me to help you be the face?
Absolutely, help me. And the reason is because when human beings, whenever there is a face with a position, we as human beings want to hear from that side. And what they've done for the past 20 years, and I know this because early in my activism, I was told that there were the parents of vaccine-injured children who were ready to go on CBS, NBC, and lawyers for the big pharma companies showed up and said, you can't let those people on, okay? So they have denied us visibility. Let somebody break through and speak in a clear fashion. So I love it that you say that you like talking to me because I'm clear. Well, good. That's what the person who breaks through needs to be. They need to be clear. They need to not seem angry. They need to seem like, well, that's a regular guy. I understand what he's saying. And so I'm just pushing this, and I'm pushing every person to have courage, to stand up, you know, get the case against vaccine mandates, because sales translate to power. Okay, if people are reading the case against vaccine mandates and it gets on the New York Times bestseller list, people stand up. And we are making so much progress. I personally think we've got 45% of the country on our side at this point. I think about 65 are still kind of, well, maybe let's do it. But let's let people start being fired, see them losing their job. Hear the stories of vaccine injuries of adults, of people who suddenly dropped dead of a heart attack, you know, and they were in perfect health the 2 weeks before they got their shot. So I am more excited now than I have ever been in the past.
Yes. It you know, like you hear phrases like darkest for the dawn, you know, that kind of thing. But we've been activist since the late 80s, Don and I. And, you know, my friend Bob, I'm over at his home now, and he and I joined forces with a bunch of our other friends back in, it was 93. And so we've been doing this a long time.
Yeah.
And we were always under the impression that this was going to have to happen. That this was where it was going. That it was going to be. And you look around the world, and they're looking at us going, hey, look, at least you got the Second Amendment. I mean, you know, we're waiting on you guys. I mean, you need to fix it, man. You know, get on it. And, you know, I'm looking for one of the signs that we did. I can make you famous, sir. This is going to be good. And I go, you know, you want to be famous? I'll do it. Because it's the slogan that we're looking for is make them make you. You know, I just want to make them make me. You know, yeah. And you have to have that attitude. I'm not doing it. You're going to have to make me. Well, we'll make you. Well, go ahead. I'm not participating. I'm not helping.
The people who made this country pledged their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor. Today, we should do nothing less.
I don't think we got a choice if we're going to have, you know, it has to be. I don't know. I'm surprised we're not more aware of what's going on. Now, see, these kind of signs we put at, you know, the Mayo and stuff like that. And this is kind of, you know, what's happening now. We're going after first responders. And then I like this one we did. And these are like sign making parties that we do and stuff in different places. But there was one, the shot heard round the world. You know, so, you know, we have fun with this. And then there was, what was the other one? You know, Liberty wears no mask, about the mask thing. Masks make me feel enslaved. You know, then different groups, you know, they'll put their stuff on it. And, but that, there was one, where is it? It was, and this is how we make them. They're stencils that we produce with a laser. And then we just mass produce a bunch of signs. And then we go put them up everywhere. I want to see your smile.
That's great.
And so we're doing another one. We just did Sholo, Arizona, then Sedona. And now this next week we're going a few days going to Prescott, Arizona. They have a big hospital up there that's making people do it. Yeah, this is the one.
Yeah.
mRNA shots equal GMO humans.
I love it.
You know, and there's another one that we have. Yeah, see, it's just you make a stencil and then we do it. But, and we have this material that we have hundreds of yards of this. The one that I was looking for, then we put them on, you know, overpasses and so on. And then they take them down. We just put more up. Now, what I was looking for is it has the Joker and with his green hair. And it says, why so serious? Shut up and believe, you know.
Well, I've been told I have a Joker face, so put my face on it.
Well, we did Governor Whitmer, you know, of Michigan.
Yeah.
And we put, you know, her face on it. And, you know, did the same thing. And people, they just had a blast with that. But the one that I'm, the slogan that I'm thinking associating with you is, and I'll put your name on, so we'll be buttheads, you know, if you're willing. I mean, audience, he said. I mean, he wanted to be famous, you know.
Or well, famous. Give it to me, Ernie. All right.
The slogan I want is make them make you.
And,
you know, I really, it just really is ringing with me. You know,
take a screen grab of this of me with thumb up.
Okay, wait. Put it up there. Let me do it. Wait. Let's see if I can push the right button. Gosh darn it! There. Okay. All right. We got it. We'll do it. I got it. Are you still there? Oh, did I freeze it? Did I hang up? Are you still there? Did I do that? I pushed the wrong. I don't know what the hell I did.
I think you did.
I don't push those buttons, you know.
Okay.
15 gazillion different computers, some I'm more familiar with than others. But the, I wanted to get your thumbs up, so we got that. We're good. The, I wanted to go ahead and show you the picture because I don't want to do it and you not actually see it, you know, because you'll be all mad. But the,
Tell you what, instead I give you permission. I don't mind. No publicity is bad publicity to me. But what I want you to do for your audience is I want you to go to Amazon, put up the case against vaccine mandates so they see it.
But we have been. I mean, you know, they.
But you're not sharing it.
I'm getting there. Okay.
Okay.
Case against vaccine mandates.
And just put case against vaccine mandates. There we go. Let everybody see it.
Now, this is coming out when?
October 26th, it says, but they're trying to rush it so that, you know, hopefully maybe like the 15th.
Well, what's your case?
My case is that they're lying about the law. And the cases that they do cite are written by eugenicists. So why should we follow them?
Okay, here's the signs that I wanted to. Now, this is what we did with her face, you know. So we did it like, you know, it used to be a joker. Why so serious and shut up and believe? Yeah. So we do something like, with green hair. They went to town on it, man. They had all kinds of fun with it.
Yeah.
But, you know, we'll do it's an ability to take your picture and we'll find a picture online or something that you can take and stencilize it so that you can tell it's you.
Yeah.
But make them make you. But I'm wondering if we could also get your book there. We do your face, The Case Against Vaccine Mandates. This is a very simple, you know, format. We could just do this and your face and then have the big headline underneath, make them make you.
Perfect.
You know,
hey, Ernie, I'm going to get going because my wife is circling the house wanting to come in.
Okay. All right. All right. Audience, I got the endorsement from Kent to do this. You want to have your own sign? We're going to hook you up, man.
I want to have my own sign made by Ernie Hancock.
The Case Against Vaccine Mandates, make them make you. You know, we should do one with Judy, too. We'll make a series, man. This would be awesome. Be like baseball cards.
There you go.
All right, Kent. It's been awesome talk to you. I feel better. But, yeah, it's going to get a lot worse before it gets better. But I think you're right that people are waking up. And they see how serious this is. And it's not even, you know, the shot is just a symptom. I mean, it's also a freaking big problem, too. But it's a symptom of something a lot bigger.
Yep.
All right. Thanks, man. Peace out. All right.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Phoenix.